Good morning, everyone. The Mary Griffith Show is underway, brought to you by Harvest Ridge Coffee and Refreshment Services Pepsi. Ooh, yummy, yummy, yummy. Got my Harvest Ridge with lots of milk and a little bit of sweetener, and I'm just a happy camper, and I'm perky and alive and awake because of Harvest Ridge Coffee, and you can be too, whether you have it at home, like I do on the weekends, or whether you have it here at the Radio Ranch. Well, don't come here. I mean, I'll be happy to make you a cup of coffee, but you should have it at your own office. Let your boss know that. Or you have it when you're out and about. The other day, I was up in Canton at the Avenue of the Saints buffet, and they served Harvest Ridge coffee. So everywhere you go, you can get a cup of Harvest Ridge. Just ask for it by name. Katie Kimber is here with the United Way of Adams County. I got to get my United Ways straight.
It's okay. We're all cousins.
It is. We're all great causes. And, of course, when you contribute in Adams County, your money stays here. When you contribute in Northeast Missouri, your money stays there. Great organizations on both sides of the river. So we're not pairing them against each other. We're just talking about United Way in general. This morning, Brian Durante, one of the United Way of Adams County board members, came by and he's very generous in our community with his time, talent, and treasure, and he is a great spokesperson for the United Way, not only as a board member, but he loves the job of loaned executive. If you are out there listening and you would like someone to come and talk to your whole employee body, or maybe you only have four people in your office, I mean, maybe you're a self-employed little bitty mom-and-pop shop, somebody can come and explain to you about the United Way mission. And those are loaned executives. Tell us about that, Katie Kimber.
Yeah, of course. So we have several. They are fantastic community members. It's all volunteer basis. And what they do is they go around to local businesses and they collaborate with them to kind of see the best way that the United Way can partner with that local business, whether it be an employee giving campaign, a corporate sponsorship, employee events, or if they just want to advocate the business themselves for the United Way and kind of learn what we do, learn about our programs, see if any of those programs would help their team members. We send our loan execs, or me, we'll come out and we'll talk to the company kind of about what we do and work with the best fit for them.
The thing about it is, obviously, you're hoping to get a donation from corporate or from the employees or both, but you're just happy if you can tell the message, because Brian has been doing this for a long time, Brian Durante, and he says he's still, everybody knows of the United Way, but very few really understand our total mission. He called it a resource aggregator.
Yep.
I loved it. I know alligators, but I've never met an aggregator. But that was a little very weak joke. but that's exactly what you do. You take the pillars that help keep our community together, like youth, healthcare, financial stability, all those things that the United Way is very concerned about, and you aggregate resources and push them towards the ones that have proven success with results.
Yeah, that's what a resource reinvestment group does, and it is a group of volunteers, and it's volunteers from within Adams County. It's your own neighbors that are kind of helping us go through that resource reinvestment process. I mean, you know you've done it. It's not an easy process because you hear all these agencies that are doing such great work in the community, and you hear what they're doing, their signs of success, just everything that goes into it. It's a tough job, but it helps them allocate the money. And that way, we're making sure that the allocations towards the money and towards the partners, it's a non-biased. It's not our staff. I mean, we only have six people on our staff. We are not allocating the money. But we have this great group of volunteers that are all great community members. We have people from all sorts of different companies within Adams County that serve on our resource reinvestment team. And we actually have several people who were on the resource reinvestment team maybe 20-some years ago that are coming back this year to help us kind of redo it again. The United Way Worldwide is going through a global brand refresh. It launches tomorrow. So there will be some things that are changing.
Now, wait a minute.
Yes.
I demand to have access now. It's not Live United, I guess, anymore. Can you tell me what it is, please?
Yes, I definitely will. So it is kind of, we're changing the logo a little bit, and I will bring you a new T-shirt tomorrow. And it'll be going into more, we have four pillars now, the healthy community, the youth education. And our new one is community resilience. which I think is a fantastic pillar for the United Way, especially within Adams County, because that kind of focuses on what the United Way of Adams County, what we're doing, our in-house programs. So all of our partners are handling the youth education, the financial stability, the healthy living, that aspect of it. And then the United Way of Adams County, we're kind of handling that community resiliency. We're backing all of our partners. We have our helpline. We have our Good News at Christmas program. And that's just kind of what we're working towards this year. They're going to launch, it is called United is the Way. So it's kind of how, which ties into our campaign theme this year, which is Leading the Way, which is about how all of our groups are loaned executives, our resource reinvestments, our businesses that we partner with, you giving me this platform to come speak about it. It's about how all of our community members are helping lead the way towards a better community. So we've kind of tied that in with the brand refresh that we're doing. But like you were saying, a lot of people don't know what the United Way does. They know it's there, it's great, but nobody knows what we do. So that's kind of what we're trying to do more this year, especially with the brand refresh, just create a new brand, create new awareness towards what we do, our programs, and our partners.
It's fantastic. Again, United Way touches about 40% of all the people who live in Adams County are touched by a United Way program. So, you know, for example, if your daughter is in Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts, or if your boy is in Scouting, you're touched by the United Way. If your child goes to a child care center, even if that child care center is not a United Way agency, the United Way overarching is to get and improve more child care facilities. You're touched by the United Way. When a family is struggling with budgeting, with understanding that you have X amount of money and you have to make that stretch, they're touched by the United Way. And because they are touched by the United Way, they can pay their rent. They can be better members of our community. And so we're all touched by the United Way. It's really fantastic. Now, this is the time when you are collecting money. We are not focusing so much on a dollar amount this year. We're focusing on things like the Dolly Parton Imagination Library to boost literacy among children. We're going to be talking about resiliency in our community. And we certainly have seen that post-flood, post-tornado, post-windstorms, post-everything, we have resiliency in our community, and part of that is because the United Way is there. When the Welcome Inn closed, the resiliency of our community came into play through the United Way. So it's very critically important that we continue to support this mission. So how can we best support financially the United Way?
So you can donate online to our website. It'll take you straight to our donation page. You can do that. You can, if you own a business, if you work at a business and you're like, hey, why are we not working with the United Way? Talk to your supervisor and see if we can come in and do a campaign at your business. If it's a local business, honestly, the United Way, we love local businesses. That is one of our pillars, basic. I would say so. And if it's a local business and you only have 4 employees, I would love to come out and speak to your 4 employees about what we do and see if you want to partner with us in some way. I mean, through this campaign process, we're only a couple months in, and I can't tell you the amount of great people I've met just through that, just through going to local businesses and presenting to people, hearing about, I like to hear about what they do as well. So really just any way that you'd want to donate to the United Way. You could send a check in the mail. You can drop a dollar off at our office. Whatever you want to do. No donation is too small, and it all contributes. I mean, we would rather have 100 small donors, and as long as it's people that believe in our mission.
Okay. Katie Kimber, we're almost out of time. Is there anything we want to talk about that I didn't mention? I like United is the Way. That's mm-hmm. the new logo, the new branding. And, of course, here it's Leading the Way, our local campaign. Is there anything else we need to touch on before I let you go?
I don't think so.
Okay. You did a great job.
Thank you.
Bob Havermail is in the green room, ready to talk. Can we contain Bob Havermail to the next 30 minutes? We'll do our best. We'll be right back. Bob Havermail is with me at 9:31, and Bob is making a show and tell. Now, I'm going to have to explain this for the radio audience, but Bob brought in something that's like the size of maybe a size C battery. We all know what a size C battery looks like. And then he took a little piece of what I thought was just dirt, and he shook it on a little piece of white paper, and he's telling me that the transistors that work, that were as big as a battery back in the olden days when Bob was young, are now just little specks of dust that you can't really see unless you almost have a microscope. And that's why everything is so small, 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 small.
Very, very small.
And the first computer used to take up big, gigantic room in a big building, thousands of square feet just to compute. And now on our cell phone, we could send a man to the moon with more technology than we had at NASA in 69.
That is absolutely correct.
And so it's all about miniaturization and the change in the electronic world.
That's correct. Everything gets smaller and smaller and faster, everything is. And it's amazing because, you know, it's 100 years ago is when radio first came about. 1921, you know, 1922, people were getting into actually radio, building a radio. Parker Gates' father started building radios in 1922. Parker got involved in 1937. You know, all kinds of industries started right here in Quincy, Illinois, that people aren't even aware of. And what they ended up happening with Gates Radio, and when the radios came out, 1921, most people aren't even aware of that. You couldn't even, amateurs couldn't even broadcast during World War One. You had to call letters, and they weren't even allowed to broadcast way back then. So when they opened it back up in 1921, 1922, you got radio stations starting to come on the air. And that's where my background comes from. My grandfather was back then. Parker Gates got his transmitter from my grandfather. And then all these manufacturing companies started up. Parker Gates was building radios. Gavin Manufacturing became Motorola, okay? There was Apex Coil here at 17th and Locust. It employed 200 people. It made coils and transformers for radios. Quincy Speaker Company was here. They used to build millions of speakers for car radios, your little transistor radios. They made them for radio station studios. All these are sub-companies that started just off of everything else. Off of Gates Radio, you've got engineers started Quintron, engineers that went to Broadcast Electronics, all these different companies in here. And you look, when I started at Motorola a long time ago, 71, it was, I think there was 6,800 people there when I started. And we used to build about 1,000 color televisions a day out of that factory. So, and I know a lot of the people in the area remember all this, but I mean, now, if you look at today, there's more electronics today in your life than ever before, and there's none of that in Quincy.
It has changed. Bob Havermail is here today, and we're talking about the electronic manufacturing that started in Quincy and the home of the car radio and Parker Gates and WTAD going on the air in 1925. We'll have our 100th birthday next year. And how everybody used to sit around and look at a big box, a giant box in your living room that was the radio. And, of course, all those big tubes and all those coils and everything that had to make that happen. And now you can get a radio signal on something the size of a speck of dust, basically.
Almost.
And so it has changed. So we're taking a trip down memory lane, but we're also going to also tie it into what is happening today. The aspect, I know, and I don't want to get into politics, but there's a lot of concern that, remember when we had the COVID shutdown, you couldn't get a car or a truck in United States because all the components, the electronic components, were being made in China and nothing was being shipped out of there and they weren't working because of COVID. How has it changed? You mentioned Quincy was the epicenter of a lot of this, and now hardly anything is made here, and really not much stuff is made in the United States per se.
Probably 90% of all your electronics is built in China, is where it is. So China doesn't make the microchips that everybody talks about. Taiwan makes the microchips. China
Free
does,
China.
Right. So what we do is we take the microchip and actually put it on the board itself. That's what China does. They actually do the assembly. And the reason, in the mid-80s, they went from what they call through-hole technology, where parts went through the hole and you soldered them at the bottom of the board, you know, ancient stuff, to what they call surface mount technology, where parts are mounted on the top of the boards. Well, that equipment is so expensive that a machine just to place that part that I showed you in that paper costs $497,000. So that's pretty critical. If you are like a Gates radio, you're only going to build so many radio station transmitters, you cannot cost justify the entire $1 million line that it takes to build that equipment. So everybody started outsourcing to China. China has a lot less labor cost. So, yeah, they can go there and make a profit and make it look great. So everybody outsourced. The problem you have now is that they've outsourced so much stuff, we don't know how to do it anymore. There's only about 1,200 companies in the United States that do what we do.
Nobody's, and you're talking about Northeast Missouri Nemo Manufacturing.
I'm talking about Nemo Manufacturing.
Your company.
Right.
There's a danger in that, though, Bob.
An extreme danger. With all the wars going on in Ukraine and everything else right now there is a 17-year replacement cycle for the missiles that they're using right now. They can't replace them fast enough. They're burning them up too fast. You look at every car that's out there. Every car right now has over 1,000 circuit boards in it. Every bumper, I mean, all the sensors, all the cameras, everything else, even your valve stems, they all have circuit boards, your side mirrors, you know, everything.
Because they're so small.
They are.
They fit into everything.
They fit into everything.
Yeah, I had a 25-year-old car. I finally bought a new car this year. The car brakes itself. I'm a terrible driver. It tells me when I'm over the center line. It tells me when I'm over the side line. It brakes if I get too close to the car in front of me. And, I mean,
the technology
is amazing.
But we don't do it here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not built here. So, you know, there's this big push now. It says, well, how are we going to get our manufacturing back? And everybody's confused. They think it's the microchip. It's not the microchip. Okay, Taiwan makes microchips. You need to learn how to manufacture. The reason the United States became the global power that it did was because during World War II, we had the manufacturing resources that we were able to do everything. We lost our edge as a country when we started outsourcing our manufacturing. Anybody that owns a manufacturing company in Quincy, I don't care if it's Napide, I don't care who it is, Master Tank, all the rest of them is going to tell you, you've got to have your manufacturing base here. So when we're outsourcing manufacturing overseas, we're actually shooting ourselves in the foot, just what we're doing.
And they're stealing our technology, too, because once we get it over there, the Chinese and others, even friendlier nations to ours, say, well, remember, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I grew up in the shadow of that Motorola plant, and I remember when the Japanese figured out how to make a color television, and they could make it a lot cheaper than Motorola.
Bought it out in 76 and moved it out, yes.
And it was devastating for Quincy's economy. We've never recovered our population base from that.
No.
But yet, Bob, when I go out to buy my billion square foot screen,
you know, your 100 square foot inch TV.
You know, the thing that, when I think about what our television set used to look like, the it was a giant piece of furniture, but the screen was just this little bitty thing in the middle. But now the screen is the wall, basically. But I want that cheap. And the other bad thing is, I don't care if it only lasts 5 or 6 years. I'll throw it away and I'll buy another one.
That's right.
We've become a throwaway society, too.
It is. And the difficulty, so, you know, and I know we're radio, it's not show and tell, like, but when I have college kids come through our factory for, you know, my show and tell with them, I'll put those same parts on a piece of paper and it looks like a piece of dust.
It does.
Okay. And that part has to be soldered at both ends. It has to be picked up off of a piece of tape like this with vacuum. It has to be picked up, placed within 1 micron of accuracy on a board. So you have an X, Y, theta coordinate on the board. You have to coordinate all this stuff up. You got to program these machines to pick these components up and put them down within that accuracy. And then you got to solder that part on both ends.
So is that done by machine or human?
That's done by a machine.
By a machine.
Yeah.
And it has to be in a clean environment, too, because
it's a clean environment.
Dust is as big as what your...
The parts.
Yeah. So you have to be careful, because if anything gets in there, it ruins the mechanism.
Terry Trader came over here a couple of years ago, went through the factory. He goes, this is just like Japan. I said, yeah, it is. Yeah, people, they don't know, because we've outsourced it for so long, nobody knows how the electronics is built anymore. They don't care.
Well, then how are you able to do it? We have to take a break. Because as I sit here with Bob Havermail, someone who, you know, has been in electronics business his whole life, from tinkering with radios when he was a kid to working, you know, in a major factory that made the radios and television sets that powered everyone's media, you know, onslaught. I mean, let's face it, when WTAD went on the air in 1925, not everybody had a radio.
Nope.
So, you know, it was like, it was an interesting aspect of working in an industry where not everybody even had the product that you were broadcasting on. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Northeast Missouri Nemo Manufacturing founder Bob Havermail. Stay tuned. Right next, you're going to hear about another great United Way program, the Good News of Christmas campaign, which is put on by the United Way. This agriculture report is brought to you by Rex Battery and Bravado. We need about 40 years, not 40 minutes, to talk to Bob Havermail. He just showed me a document signed by Parker Gates, one of the pioneers in broadcasting. We've got the history of early radio in Quincy. But Bob, we're talking about Nemo Manufacturing, how things have changed. Gates Radio, Motorola, Quincy Speaker, Apex Coil, Quintron, Trescomp, Havtronics. I think there's something you'd have to do with that, that Havermail name. Complex System, Advanced Electronic Systems, and Nemo Manufacturing. And you just pulled out of a little bag. What's funny is, how much is this little piece of dust that you sprinkled all over? Do I have to pay you for that?
No.
I'm looking down at these microcosmic little specks of dust right here are actually transmitters, little transistor things. You just pulled out of a little pink plastic bag in your pocket. This is what we designed. This was a prototype for some big fighter jet.
The board that I had showed you, it's what they call a flex circuitry. It's top and bottom side. So everything moves. Well, you can't have anything move when you're building it because it's so fine. So that particular board that I just pulled out of here, that is a fingerprint identification for an AR-15 rifle is what it is. The rifle will not fire unless it identifies your fingerprint. 12 years ago, my company built the first PGM radar system prototype for the F-35 fighters. We didn't design them. We build them.
You build them. You're not in the business of inventing so much or designing so much as in making new technology possible by building it here in the United States.
So the design engineers know the electronic theory on I have to put this part with this part to this part to get this result. That design engineer has no clue on how to get that part put on a board and how to get it soldered too. That's totally different. That's electronic manufacturing. That's why when Gates and the rest of them, you had design engineers would work with the factory people at the same time as they brought new products out. They would never work right. So you sit here and you do your engineering and your manufacturing have to work together. So why China has such an advantage over us is they have design teams right next to their manufacturing people. So somebody can come up and say, you know, I got a crazy idea. I want to build this new product. I want to build something that has little flashing LEDs on it doing everything else. Thus, send the idea to China. China's engineers will design it, work right next door with the manufacturing people so they know how to build it the cheapest they possibly can, and then ship it to us.
How are you doing it in little old LaGrange, Missouri? I mean, how is this happening that you're able to do this?
It's a real slow, complicated process. The wife and I started Nemo in 2002 out of my basement, okay? And I had a customer in St. Louis that basically we were hand soldering the boards. Back then they weren't quite as small as what they are now. And as we, about 6 months into it, we rented a building and we bought some equipment. Glen Air was closing down, so we bought some of their used equipment. And then, you know, we picked up more business. We built for Gates Air. We built for Glen Air when they were still around. We built for ICS, a bunch of the different people around here. And then we slowly would buy a piece of equipment when we could afford it. You can't go out there and spend $4 or $5 million in equipment if you don't have the orders in there, because everything pushes out. And one of the things, you know, what people need to realize, you still can't get, there's not an abundance of new cars out there. And I explain why, because the automotive industry drove JIT, just-in-time manufacturing. So for years, the automotive industry would say, you have to have this line in place a year in advance. You've got to have all your suppliers lined up so that we want the parts shipped to us 1 day early, 0 days late. So JIT drove the industry for 20 years. When COVID hit worldwide, everybody shut down. All the component suppliers ended up almost going out of business because everybody canceled their orders. So now JIT's not coming back anymore. They won't do it. So now there's these lead times. During 2 years ago, the lead time on components was over 152 weeks from the day that you ordered it. That's how far out we are on stuff. Typically, right now, on a long-range project, and if it's a part that's hard to get, it's typically around 33 weeks. It's still a half a year out or better. So when I build stuff, I'm like 2 to 3 years in advance of what's coming out to the public.
Wow. It's fascinating. And here's the other thing, as you sit here across from me, a gray-haired man,
yes,
and you've seen it
very
all.
Gray.
Are we training up the next generation of curiosity seekers like Bob Havermeel? Are we creating the new Bob Havermeels here? Or are we relying on Bob Havermeels of Germany and China and, you know, Israel and other places? How are we going to turn this around so that America comes back to...
They're not training them. There's not a college course that does this, okay? When Harris was in Quincy and Gates years ago when they were really going good, they had the broadcast electronics class where they'd teach you about broadcasting so they could nurture future engineers is what it would be. As far as the manufacturing, no. I mean, there is no college that you can go to learn electronic manufacturing. You know, there's specialty places that you can learn about doing electronic manufacturing. But since there's not that many companies that do it, people have no clue. I get the kids come over from the university, and we build, if you've been out to Aladdin's Castle or even Scotty's, okay, and you swipe that little card and it goes red, blue, green, my company builds every one of those, okay? And the kids go, oh, I've seen that out there. Yeah, you have no idea how it's even built. And then we show them, this line that's about 60 feet long with equipment and machines that go so fast that they'll put down parts 100. My machine will put down 100,000 of those parts an hour within 1 micron of accuracy all day long, okay? That machine can't move because that part is so small, any vibration will move it. So that machine weighs 7 tons. It's really heavy. So all these things come in there. When you go to have that, it's placed on solder paste, and then when it goes out of all the placement machines and places all the parts, it has to go into this giant pizza oven, basically is what it is, top and bottom side heaters. And you have to bring the temperature up so slowly to where that paste liquefies. So if you have two pads and one pad liquefies before the other one, those parts are so small that the part will literally tombstone up. I mean, this is how precise everything is in a building. When I bring people through and actually show them, they're just shocked. The lieutenant governor's been through a couple of times. He calls me Mr. Microchip, and it's like, no, I'm not a microchip. I put the things on the board. And if we don't get our country back into building our own stuff again, especially on electronics, man, we're in a heap of trouble.
Yeah, it's an interesting and fascinating thing. Bob, real quick, the two-minute warning. The industry's changed so much in the last 100 years, and you can't possibly really train somebody how to do this because by the time they get out of a four-year college course, the technology has changed. So you have to train them to always be curious and inquisitive. What is the future of American manufacturing? The two-minute warning.
I hope that, you know, we will get our electronics manufacturing back to us, the United States. There's a big push right now that they're trying to bring all the electronics manufacturing. A lot of companies have already fled, you know, the overseas manufacturing. They're hedging their bets right now. So what they'll end up doing is, okay, if we still got to have a price competitive point on it, you know, they have to, you know, they have that there, but you know, they don't want to be held hostage either if something happens internationally and China just cuts off the electronics. People need to think about that, okay? If they say, no, we're not shipping you anything, all your refrigerators, all your washers, dryers, all replacement boards, you're not going to be able to get them, okay? Now we've got a real problem. And, you know, people, when you buy the stuff, it's great to have cheap. You, I know I like to have cheap stuff too, but, you know, American manufacturing, if you want it here, costs you a little bit more money.
Okay, folks. Every time you go out and you buy something or you're mad because you can't get something, it's because somebody else is controlling the production, and that somebody needs to be us. But thank goodness that right here in little old LaGrange, Missouri, there's a guy who's put millions of dollars into a business to make this stuff in the United States of America. And his name is Bob Havermail, and he's the founder of Nemo Manufacturing, and he does a lot of good for our community in a whole bunch of other ways, too. And we're just thankful that he came by today to walk down memory lane, and he gave me a little thing about the history of radio in Quincy, and I can't wait to read it all. Thank you, Bob.
You're welcome to come over and see us anytime. I'll give you the nickel tour.
God, my eyesight's so bad, I wouldn't be able to see what you're doing.
We have cameras that does all that stuff.